This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
And it's a beautiful gardening day out here.
It is. Actually, where I came from, up in Collingwood, there's hardly any snow. Green. Very little. But it's coming. It's coming. Dean Holland here with you, the littlest, weest sprig in the garden, trying
You're on camera.
To
be careful what you say.
Down roots. Fair enough. And how are you, Charlie?
I'm excellent. Dean and I are both in the studio today. Yeah. So for anybody who's got a computer close by, you can actually see us. We are live streaming at am740.ca. Or .com, I forget.
And I think we always get a little bit giddier when we're in the studio.
So. Together. We giggle more.
Yes, because other than the plexiglass, we could, it's like the boy in the bubble. We could almost reach out and touch each other. I should get to some business at hand here. I know you have a special announcement, but before we do that, we would love for you to call early, call often, and one question per call, please. Anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere in the province of Ontario. It's a toll-free call, 1-866-740-4740. And if you are a first-time caller, please let Carlos know, because we'll give you your well-earned garden wings.
That's right. Even on a snowy day, that's 1 week before Christmas.
So how
are you doing? You got all your shopping done?
No.
You got your letters off to Santa, at least?
Yes. But don't have everything done. And in fact, my wife and I, after the show, we're meeting in Barrie.
Your shopping there.
Yeah, to do a little halfway bit of shopping and poking around there. Yeah.
Good idea. And I hear you're making a special, bringing the music together special here for AM 740. Yes. And I think it'll be on other stations.
And the new Classical FM, our sister station. So on Sunday nights, I host Big Band Sunday Night. Mm-hmm. And the first hour of that is a show that I created a few years ago called Radio Limelight, which is all about the Great American Songbook. However, this week, that first hour will be replaced with a special show called How the Jewish Composers Wrote Christmas, because so many of our favorite Christmas songs
are all written by Jews.
Written by Jews. Yeah, yeah. It was like crazy.
Well, it's so funny because I was telling my husband and my daughter yesterday, who are Jewish, that this special was being put together. It was a Moses Znaimer, idea. Yep. And I said, I'm pretty sure it's called How the Jews Wrote Christmas. And they both started to laugh and they're like, well, no kidding. And then, of course, my daughter, who's got a story for everything, she's like, well, of course, because the Christians are all busy decorating. The Jews had nothing to do. So what are they doing? They're writing songs for Christmas. There would be no Christmas if Jews weren't around making it happen. For the Christians. She said, all the elves are Jewish. You know that, right? I was like, really? How do you know that? She goes, you can just tell looking at them.
I need to meet your daughter.
Yes, she's very funny.
Very, very funny. Well, I got to tell you, I did the show with a gentleman by the name of Jordan Clapman. Mm. And he is, he's really the one that brought the information to the show. And he knows so much. And I learned a ton from him, being somebody who was, I was brought up Roman Catholic. And
what do you know?
So what do I know?
Except
Christmas is a great song, and Irving Berlin was Jewish. That's
one example.
Songs we talk about. But there are many, that we talk about. And so,
that's fun.
So 7 p.m.
So tomorrow.
7 p.m., 7 p.m. tomorrow.
So tune in
on either, on
96.3 or here on AM 740.
Absolutely.
For a one-hour special. That's great. I'm going to get my family listening to that.
You have a special announcement.
Well, it's you make it sound so special. It's not that special. It's just an announcement. So this is just an announcement in the sense of something fun that's going on as we head into the dark days of winter. Though, really, honestly, it's not too many more days before the days start getting longer.
That's true.
Yes. So we're in the dark days of winter. So it's a good idea to think about ways to, keep our brains in the garden,
In fact, the next time we do the show, the days will be getting longer won't they?
I know. Spring will be right around the corner. Mm-hmm. So what's going on is the Toronto Master Gardeners. To be a Master Gardener, there are things criteria to stay as a Master Gardener. You not only do study and pass tests and exams and do all sorts of things that way, but then to maintain your status, you must do some technical updates and do some volunteering, etc. So they have Toronto Master Gardeners have a virtual technical update called Ecological Gardening. It's pretty much an all-day thing. It's from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, January the 8th, so a couple of weeks from today. Yeah. Starts at 9 a.m., but of course you'll be listening to the radio show, so you won't be listening to these guys. Mm-hmm. But at 10, you could tune in to this opportunity to connect with nature and community. Tickets are $30. There's great speakers. It is, again, a Zoom registration. If you'd like to get involved in something like this, it's a really inspirational opportunity because these are smart people. The Toronto Master Gardeners are very, very active and can be, you can learn a lot, but you can also be kind of really inspired and meet with other community members, other gardening wackos. My friend Tina sent this to me. Anyway, she's a good example of a wacky gardener. But they're an active and fun group. So bottom line is you would go to torontomastergardeners.ca if you'd like to register for this event. And anybody can register, so you don't have to be a Master Gardener.
And is it an online event this
year? It's a Zoom event, and there are three speakers, and they are really going to be talking about nature and community. So, sustainable ideas. You're going to get lots of good ideas for how to maintain biodiversity, how to connect your little plot of land, wherever it is, with the bigger world around you.
Okay.
Well, very fun.
I like the sound of that, for sure. Well, you know what? We have to take our first break. We are there already. Okay, so, but do give us a call. We know that you're out Christmas shopping, but, you probably have a cell phone with you, too, so you can give us a call and ask any of those gardening questions. And it might, we get a lot of indoor gardening questions right now, don't we?
And even tips. People sometimes have answers to other people's questions or some of their tips and techniques. I love to hear it. Or if you've got a good idea for gifts for gardeners.
Okay, fabulous. We will be right back.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, we are back.
We didn't go anywhere.
It's true.
We were laughing and giggling. We were telling each other jokes.
It's true. We didn't go
anywhere.
It's
pretty fun being together.
You're not supposed to tell them the radio secrets, Charlie.
Well, I don't want people to think we had like a nap or something.
No, that's true.
We didn't go
anywhere. We just chit-chat in between and so find out how our Christmas shopping and such is going. I got a little gift for you. Got a caller on the line.
Nice.
Yeah, we're going to go all the way down to Port Dover. Charles, how are you?
And Charles is a first-time caller.
He is. Woo. Charles, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you for asking.
Well, I have a gift for you, because you are a gift to us being a first-time caller. Here you are, sir.
Welcome to the show.
I need all the good elves I can get.
Don't we all?
We got a question there, Charles, have you?
Yes, I live in Port Dover, which is the bottom of Canada, sometimes referred to as the Banana Belt, as you know, we have Carolinian Forest.
True.
Yeah, and I have a neighbor that goes down there. He's a motorcycle driver and goes down there
the
13th of Fridays. Yeah.
Him and 100,000 other people.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen it. It's crazy.
Anyhow, my question is, Port Dover has a sprinkling of Osage trees, which I think are relatively rare, and I've tried to propagate them from the Osage orange that drops off them in the fall with no success. Is there any way you can propagate Osage trees from that big orange?
So you've collected seeds and you've tried to grow the seeds and you've had zero germination? Is that what's happened?
Well, it's not exactly a seed. It's literally the size of a large orange, and it has all these fibrous little seeds in it. And I've never been able to, cut them up or propagate them. I've even tried throwing them down the ravine, hoping some deer would eat, and then maybe the fallout, as you say, would propagate, but no success.
You're right. I'm just looking at a photograph here. I've never tried to grow an Osage orange. So you know what? You're going to have to leave that with me for a second or hang on while I check here.
Well,
another name.
I believe it. I can leave it with you, Charlie. You got other. I thought this might be a bit of a poser because Osage are not that. There aren't that many of them.
I remember questions years ago here on the show. These oranges were along some country road somewhere, probably down near where you live or that general part of Ontario, and these big oranges would fall on the road, and it was becoming an issue, like a dangerous thing with the fruit.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I'm just looking here.
Well, and it's curious. It doesn't look to me like I'm not familiar with this, a typical orange.
They are pretty rock hard when they come off the tree.
What are they good for? I like it. So, early Native Americans esteemed the tree for its excellent wood, made superior hunting bows, tomahawks, etc. Are they really oranges? Is a good question. They are larger. They're globular. They average 8 to 15 centimeters in diameter. The fruit, slightly lopsided appearance from protruding lumps. The surface is deeply grooved, yellow, green, rough, covered in a few stray wiry hairs. Okay, so you're gonna
sounds delicious.
No, a hairy orange. So yes, like I say, leave that with me, and I'm gonna see what I can learn. Because how do you propagate? I mean, bottom line is, I'm sure, so you have one tree you're thinking of, Charles, or multi-trees?
Well, there are a few scattered through some rural roads around Port Dover, and I managed to pick up three the other day. Some people use them for winter decorations around their houses.
I believe it. Yeah, it's like hanging
cinnamon
sticks.
It was just something I've been thinking of for about the last 20-odd years.
Okay, apparently the fruit and the wood of this tree does contain some anti-fungicide compounds, which is what would make it be very slow to rot.
I think originally the tree was decimated in the United States because it was cut down for railway ties because it was so tough.
It's a really, really dense wood and slow to rot because of the antifungal properties. Okay, cool. All right, I'm on it. We'll report back after the next break, perhaps.
Okay,
thanks for calling.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And Merry
Christmas
to you.
Okay, we've got lots of lines open, so do give us a call. We would love to hear from you. And again, anywhere in the province, you can call toll-free 1-866-740-4740. That is the number that Charles would have used because he was calling from Port Dover. But if you're anywhere in the Toronto area, you just need to dial 416-360-0740. The other thing you can do any time of the day or night is email charlie at c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. Okay, and in fact, I have an email that I would love to toss at you. How's that? Well, I don't want to toss it at you. I'll read it to you. How's that?
Me.
Yeah. From Joe, Jocum. Hello, Charlie. A few leaves on my lemon tree are showing signs of being eaten by something. I have searched the plant and not found anything. Any ideas? Best wishes, Joe. He's a professor at Guelph University, and he sent you a picture, too, didn't he?
He did, yeah. And you can see it's a leaf, a lemon leaf with quite a chunk, like a good 20% of the leaf is missing. Yeah, I don't want to be a jerk here, but properly I would think his name is pronounced Joachim.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No worries. If Joe's Joaquin. Listening, that's that silent J, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah,
Spanish.
Okay, no.
Yeah, whatever.
Joaquin.
So, I'll tell you another story if we have a minute on Spanish. But anyway, okay. So thank you for your email. And this is a bit of a challenge because I'm assuming this lemon tree is inside the house. It's a Meyer lemon. It's a tropical plant. It would be dead if it was outside. So it's obviously in a pot. It's come into the house for the winter. So who is eating the leaves of this plant? And realistically, that's a challenge because he said he looked very closely. He sees nothing. The insects that love lemon trees tend to be sucking insects like aphids and mealybugs and, you know, there's spider mites. There's a whole bunch of pests, insect and spider pests, but they suck the juices out of the plant. They don't chew the leaves. So who would be chewing this? This is a big puzzle. This is a mystery.
But he has any grandchildren.
Well... So. Yeah, I don't know.
Because it does look, when I saw the picture, I mean, it looks like something good. Like it looks like something a caterpillar of some sort would do.
Right. So but he looked. He doesn't see any caterpillars. Yeah. So here's a really wacky thing. I hope you're listening, Joe. There's something called a katydid. And a katydid is part cricket, actually.
Yeah.
They look exactly like the leaves of a lemon tree. and they eat the leaves. I'm wondering if there's a katydid on that tree and he just didn't see it because they're so camouflaged.
Right.
And it would chew chunks out of the leaves.
Huh.
So I'm thinking maybe take another look. But they do tend to make noises. They do that rubbing of the back leg, so you hear it. So, be, you know, bush crickets in the house and you don't know they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to know. Hard to say exactly. Like sucking insects, you're not going to really see them, but they're not going to take chunks. Katydids are going to take chunks, but they're large insects and do sometimes make noise. A thought, if he just wants to kind of do something interesting, because he's probably a pretty interesting guy. He works for the School of Hospitality, Food and Tourism Management at my alma mater, University of Guelph. So maybe contact NIC, which stands for Natural Insect Control. NIC is in St. Catharines. And right away, or order online, have sent to you some eggs of insects that will eat other insects. So maybe get some eggs of praying mantids. Or maybe some eggs, maybe you don't want to bring ladybugs into your house, but praying mantids are so cool. Maybe that lacewings. Lacewings are great insects for eating other insects. So maybe...
So you could bring get them into your house?
Sure. Right away, get the eggs,
and
follow all the instructions,
in
and then exactly, hatch those little eggs out and have them on the tree. If there's something to eat there, they will eat it. If there's nothing to eat, they will die.
That is fascinating.
I just think it would be a fun idea. So I hope you're listening, Joe. And let us know if you find anything that's doing the damage, because that's a puzzle.
Yeah. Thanks to Joachim. And thanks to you for correcting my pronunciation.
Yeah, my apologies for correcting.
No, it's great. Okay. That's great. Okay. We have a caller on the line. Oh, right. We have to go to a break. We have a caller on the line, but we do have to go to... I got so involved in the whole idea of having these bugs in your house.
Hatching insects.
Okay, we're going to go to break, and then when we come back, we will have a caller.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, we are back, and we get to go to a little town that is not too far from Port Dover, where Charles was. Actually, this is the hometown of my wife. Yes, going to Mount Hope. We got Peggy there. How are you this morning, Peggy?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you too?
We're good. Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah.
That's
what do you got for us this morning?
Well, very silly me, found out in my garage a basket of bulbs, Aleah bulbs, which I missed when I planted the others. How do I preserve them over the winter, and what do I do with them, please?
What kind of bulbs were they again?
They're Aleah. They're like a tall stalk with a spiky round bulb on the
favorites.
Top or flower.
I love the alliums.
Yeah,
oh, they're gorgeous.
It's an ornamental onion. So these are the large ones, the giganteums.
Yes.
And are you, well, your ground's not frozen. I mean, it wouldn't be optimal, but your ground is not frozen.
Oh, I could still do them?
Yeah.
I would, because you know
Peggy,
what?
I'd be happy to take them off your hands. I can get my in-laws to scoop them up. You can give them to me. So.
Yeah, because...
I thought maybe it was too late, but I will do that then. Just plant them as I know, not deeper or anything like that.
No, plant them as you would. And if you've got squirrels watching you, just try and, camouflage them as best you can. Not that the allium is that popular with the squirrels, but squirrels are curious and they're going to say, what did you just bury?
Yeah, and we've got lots of them around here.
So get somebody to distract the squirrels while you get them in the ground today, because your ground is not frozen. There is no other way to preserve them. Hold them in your garage till next spring, they will just shrivel up and die.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
And they're so tall, it'd be hard to force, because you could force... Yeah. Bulbs, right? Put them in a pot, stick them in the fridge, but it just that wouldn't work either. They're too tall. So get them in the ground, like right after the show.
Okay. Will do. And a very Merry Christmas to both of you. I enjoy the show every week.
Lovely.
Thanks so much
for joining us. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, you know what? I have to admit that Gail, my wife, she, remember those bulbs that got kicked out by the squirrels about a month ago, and we've been so busy, she never got them in.
Oh.
But we were thinking, we still have time to get them in,
so you
can, right?
You can. Obviously, you want to get them in a little earlier, but the ground is not frozen, so take advantage. Tulips are the best. You can put tulips in right up till whenever the ground freezes.
And that's what they are. We have tulips. Yep. Okay. Going to St. Mary, Ontario, we have Janet on the line. How are you this morning, Janet?
I'm good.
Good morning.
Good. Thanks for calling. What have you, you got a question for Charlie? Janet?
A few months ago. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Better now, yep.
Okay.
Okay, you are breaking up. I'm not sure why. No, you don't have your radio on, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, good. And you're not on speakerphone, are you?
Better?
Well, you're kind of coming in and out.
Well, maybe we're... Are you still there, Janet?
In and out. Sorry.
Oh, there we are. So we keep.
Okay.
There we are.
I'll throw this question at you if you just want to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rosette Mites, I understood. I've been doing some research on Prolin next spring, and it says to use a dormant oil spring.
Right. Dormant oil spring for mites, I think she said.
The rosette mite on the echinacea.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right. Okay, good. Let me just... So, because you do have that disease, do you? The echinacea curling up?
Yeah. Okay. I see it around St. Mary's, yeah.
That's a new one, eh? And I it's pretty new to me, anyway. I think it's new in Ontario. Coneflowers. Coneflower cleanup. Right.
So, I did... I've cleaned up all the deadheads. Mm-hmm. I left them birds, but I've cleaned them up. And then I'm thinking that my next option is in the spring is to spray before they flower with oil.
Right. The problem with dormant oil is designed to go on dormant plants and dormant woody plants, not herbaceous green plants. So, I hear you. The information that I have, because like I say, this is still something they're trying to figure out. So the coneflower rosette mite.
Yes.
How to control it is still a problem, but they're thinking that through sanitation, like severe good garden hygiene, you may be able to eliminate the problem. So that means in the fall, cutting them right down to the ground and taking everything that you cut, leaves, stems, old flowers, etc., and disposing of all that material off the property. So whether you burn it in the fire pit or it goes into a green garbage bag, but you get rid of it off the property. And at the end of the day here, I'm just double checking because I did this research for another caller and it's not something that I've ever had. And it looks a lot like aster yellows. So you got this aster.
And that's what I was concerned I had, which is very devastating. But I've figured out by just looking at what the rosettes are looking like, it looked to me like it's the mite.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, of course, integrated pest management strategies include, as soon as you see diseased plants, if this would be in the spring or summer, dig them up and get rid of them. I know. So
I have hundreds of them.
I know. Actually, you know what? It's your email that I've got in front of me. You emailed me back in August on this subject.
Yeah, okay.
So once it's infected with aster yellows, it's a lost cause since the disease is incurable. So that's the prompt removal of infected plants. I think I sent you, if you Google, it's called coneflower cleanup.
Yes.
Ohio State University. They give quite a good story on the difference, obviously, between aster yellows and the coneflower mite. They also give some suggestions to what to do. Now, I agree with you. You don't want to get rid of them, but so controlling insects, because we worry that the insects might be moving some of these diseases around, or in the case of the mites, controlling weeds, keeping everything clean and clear, good air circulation, good sun, etc., to help control the any of these insects. And, of course, the aster yellows thing is probably the bigger thing because it is truly incurable. Nobody really knows exactly how to get rid of the coneflower rosette mite. But sanitation is where they're really going with that. And, I'm trying to think.
Okay. I pulled out a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And some beautiful ones, too, just in a panic. And then I thought, well, I wonder if I could do a dormant oil. So I think what I'll do then, when we have another thaw this winter, I'll go out and I'll prune them right down to the bottom and get rid of them.
Good idea.
I'm not going to dig them up. I'm going to take a chance on leaving the roots.
Do that, and then watch them in the spring. Right.
Yep.
And if it is an insect like this rosette mite, it does cause a very distorted growth. So you'll know once you see that distortion. You're not going to be able to kill the mite with a contact insecticide because you're never going to be able to contact all the insects or the mites, which are spiders. What you need is something that's illegal in Ontario, which would be a systemic insecticide. That could be anything from What did we used to put on our birch trees? We haven't used these chemicals in so long. There are systemic insecticides, or even partially systemic, but they are not legal in Ontario at all.
Yes, no, and I don't want to use that. So I guess I'll be working on a good cleanup and really keep close eye on the rosettes when they start to open up.
Do for sure. All right, let me know how that goes.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks so much.
That sounds like a nasty problem.
It is, some of those. You know what it is partially, too? It's because of climate change, because we're seeing warmer, later falls, sometimes later or earlier springs, shorter winters, lots of thawing, all kinds of changes. The insects, the birds, all the animals are quite affected by this. So migratory paths are changing. Where birds are now going to do their nesting and their migrating is changing by hundreds of kilometers sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just because it's a changed world in the spring and changed in the fall, so it's interesting. It's a lot of documentation going on, and so we are sometimes running into new diseases or new insects as a result of climate change.
Mm-hmm. I have an email here from Carmelita, who is asking about composting in her flower beds. It seems to me that her question is, should she use leaves or peat moss, or would a soil mix be a better option for her?
And she's trying to increase the bulk in her gardens, maybe?
It sounds like it. It's a very brief email. Yeah. Composting leaves in flower bed using leaves, will peat moss work to cover the leaves?
Oh, I see.
She wants to know whether she should cover the leaves with something.
She's
probably
worried
to stop
the leaves
them from blowing off.
Exactly, blow away. So probably, because that email is a week or two old, what I do when I've got leaves is I never give them away, never send them anywhere, keep them on the property, use your mower with the bag on it, and run the leaves over so that you're breaking down big maple leaves, or even if they're little honey locust leaves, you're using your mower like a vacuum sometimes. You're sucking the leaves up into the mower, chopping them up if they're big, catching them in the bag, then empty the bag onto your gardens. And if you put as much as 10 centimeters, so 4 inches of chopped up leaves onto your garden beds in the fall, it's magic what will happen. Number one, they won't blow away because they're small. With the snow and the rain, the moisture, the life in the soil from below, the decomposition of those leaves happens very quickly. Right. So even that big, 4-inch blanket on top of your garden, not on your lawn, of course, but on your garden, that will all be gone in June. You won't see a leaf anywhere because it will all disappear. I think peat moss is more likely to blow away than the leaves are. So I wouldn't spend a lot of money on peat moss. If you have homemade compost, sure, throw that on top. If you want to add even more life and speed up the decomposition of those leaves, again, homemade compost is full of life. A couple of bags of composted manure, full of life, little tiny microorganisms. Right. Scatter that on top of your leaves. They will disappear right before your very eyes.
Yeah. Now, I have to admit, that's something I did learn years ago about composting, is the more cuts and scores you have in it, it allows those organisms to get in and break it down faster.
Faster. That's right. Yeah. The smaller you chop any of your organic stuff, whether it's broccoli stems or eggshells or any of it, coffee grounds, any of it, the smaller it is, the faster it will disappear and become gardener's gold.
Gotcha. We do have lines open, so give us a call anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere in the province of Ontario, which so far all the calls have been beyond Toronto this morning, 1-866-740-4740. We would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Questions, tips, tricks, and I still have to give Charles his how to propagate the Osage oranges.
Yes,
but
you do.
Turns out Dean is quite the creative guy. I had no idea. Not only is he a gardener and obviously a radio host and a music aficionado and all kinds of things, he's also quite a talented stained glass artist. So for anybody who's looking on camera, I'm going to show you what Dean made and brought for me as a Christmas present. So that is a ginkgo leaf in fall color, so showing golden fall color. And it's been encased in glass, which is so cool. So you actually did this whole thing. You collected the leaf, Did you dry the leaf? I guess you did.
Yeah, we dried them and pressed them, and then put them in between two pieces of glass.
Really thin pieces of glass.
And then, yeah, and then just frame them with some lead glass that I thought was in keeping with the color of the leaf.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And one of the things I've been doing, because I have pretty big windows at my place, mm-hmm. and I'm really encouraging birds. What happens when you have big windows and birds yes. is you have birds hitting windows.
You do.
So I have been making a real point on some of my bigger windows to hang various and sundry stained, yeah. small. Nothing is going to block my view, but it's going to make it pretty clear to the bird that that's not a place to fly.
Yeah. This is something I started doing years ago. And we have big bay windows in our house as well. We have the same problem. Every once in a while you hear the thump. Boom, you know, and thankfully sometimes they kind of suck. Side swipe them,
yeah.
but part of the problem in our house is that we have bay windows on opposite sides of the house, so
oh,
I think
they
can see
through.
It through, right? And we've lost a few birds to those lovely big windows that we have in our house. Yeah, it was our house was built in the late 60s, so they have those big windows, which
nice.
Is great.
Yeah, I know,
for
love
light.
It. And that's bringing the indoors in, outdoors in, and indoors out, like the making the transition between out and in, and enjoying the outdoors so much more with big windows. Why not? Love it, but just hate to see the birds suffer for it.
Indeed. We're going to go to a break, and then, again, the lines are open. I've got some more emails from you, and I have a question as well for you, okay, when we come back.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, we are back here on The Garden Show, and the snow is coming down, and I just got a text from my wife in Collingwood. When I left, no snow whatsoever. It started about three-quarters of my drive down, but she says it is a winter wonderland
beautiful.
All over again.
Good. Yeah. And maybe it won't melt.
I don't think it's going. The temperature seemed to
pretty
be
zero-y.
Yeah, projecting zero or below. Yeah.
White Christmas would be nice.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. You have a bit of an answer to that
Osage
orange?
Yeah, Charles was saying he wants to propagate.
Yep.
But the idea of getting the seeds out seemed a bit like he couldn't quite figure that out. So it says here, and I'm going to let you know what it says here on the web, wear gloves when working with Osage orange fruit because it contains a milky sap that can cause skin irritation. We're all different, right, how
right.
we respond
yeah.
to things. Scoop off any rind, pulp, and seeds that are floating on the surface of the water. So this is something we probably have to go a little deeper to get homeguides.sfgate.com, how to grow an Osage orange from seed. So Home Guides will give you mm-hmm. some indication. You're going to do some separation, obviously. He said
right.
it's pretty hard to find seeds in amongst all that pulp. However, the easier way by far would be to take cuttings on the plant. Just take some tip cuttings, stem cuttings off the main plant. So you're going to take new growth in mid to late summer. So mid to late summer would be, July, August.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be this year's growth. It'll be soft, flexible. You take about 6-inch or, whatever that is, 15-centimeter cuttings, sharp, clean secateurs, pruners, strip off the lower leaves, rooting hormone, number two rooting hormone. So that's for semi-hardwoods.
Okay.
Because it is a semi-hardwood at that point. It's not hardwood. It will become a hardwood, but still it's semi because it's flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And then into some moist media. It could be sand, could be perlite. Some people try water for something like that and get some roots growing and start some little plants that way. That's going to be your easiest way to propagate.
Right. And it's funny because you would think that seed would be easier. But
normally, yes, you would
not
think.
Necessarily.
So, if you can't find the seeds, or have you ever tried to grow a banana from a seed?
No.
Because you can't find seeds in bananas.
They're like, really, really, just throw the banana into the garden.
Just eat them.
just eat them.
They don't grow in our stomachs, that's for sure. No, they are not viable seeds.
Right. You've reminded me of something. I'm sure at one point, weren't we all told when we swallowed an apple seed, there you're going to get an apple tree growing inside
grow.
I remember that.
Don't eat seeds. like watermelon seeds back before they had seedless watermelons.
Right.
Yeah, don't eat the
seeds. I think it was more fun with. I made a stained glass watermelon. I'll tell you about it another time.
Yeah.
And it has seeds in it.
It was more fun because you learned how to spit.
You learned.
I bet this generation of people.
Press them between your fingers. You can really get some distance there.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to North York. We have a caller from North York. We have Maureen on the line. How are you this morning, Maureen?
Good morning. Good morning, Dean and Charlie. I'm calling about how to stop birds from hitting your window.
You have a tip.
I hate it when that happens, mm-hmm. Especially if they don't make it. There mm-hmm. are decals that you can buy mm-hmm. at garden centers mm-hmm. and also from Amazon. Mm-hmm. They have an ultra. They just stick it on the window mm-hmm. and get different shapes, butterflies, flowers, or abstract designs, and it gives an ultraviolet light that stops the bird from flying into your window.
Right. And I got some of those, and when I read more closely, I think I got them at Wild Birds Unlimited, and yet I'm sure you could get them at the Urban Nature Store and, like you said, Amazon. They want you to put them on the outside of the windows because otherwise the UV, if you put them on the inside, most of us have UV protection on our windows so that they won't work as effectively. And they say they're only going to last like 4 months or some such thing outside.
Yeah.
And if it's cold, use hot water to warm up the glass. But I have a railing that's glass, and I have to always keep furniture in front of that glass railing because the birds hit it. And I thought, well, that's so silly. You know, you put this beautiful glass railing and then you've got furniture in front of it all the time. So I'm trying the decals. And so far, I'm proud to say no birds have hit it because I learned that they hit it by, unfortunately, seeing them hit it.
And the other thing is if you see one, it's lying on the ground. Mm-hmm. It's usually, if you pick it up mm-hmm. and put it with gloves or whatever mm-hmm. and put it in a cardboard box, sometimes they're just stunned, mm-hmm. and then you wait, and about 10 minutes or so, you'll see them flying away.
True. And that...
So sometimes they're just stunned. They're not dead.
True. And that protects them from cats, the local cats that might take advantage of the stunned bird.
Sylvester just sitting there waiting, right?
Exactly. We're laughing.
Anyway, it's one of my pet causes, so I just wanted to.
Have you tried the decals?
About that. And the other thing I want to say, which is also my pet cause, I feed the birds, mm-hmm. but also in the winter, people don't realize it. Birds need fresh water.
Right.
So if you can put out some, I know it'll freeze, but even if you put it out once or twice a day, at least gives them a chance to get some fresh water.
Or get yourself a little bird bath warmer. Put that on your Christmas list because it requires electricity, of course, but it keeps the bird bath thawed. Or you know what I have? Go to your local pet store and get a plug-in dog bowl.
Really?
Yeah, it's a big, it's probably 10 inches or more than 10 inches across, and you just plug it into an outside outlet and keep water in it, and it's hilarious. Like, even 4 feet of snow will fall, but it'll be completely melted right through the cylinder will be melted right down. It's pretty cool. It works. So a dog bowl is a nice way to keep some open water, too.
And that, Maureen, is why Charlie Dobbin is on the other side of the glass.
He's a nutcase.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you, Maureen.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it up, because you're absolutely right. People forget about the water. They think about the food and so much, but not the water.
Okay, and happy holidays to you.
Thanks for calling, Maureen.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I think we can squeeze in one more call. Okay, we got Jan.
Yeah, it looks like Janet's on the line.
Have I got Janet? Maybe not.
Well, she's just being answered.
She is. Okay.
No, it's green. Now you can answer. Now you can go. You can go to Janet.
So if Janet is on the line. Oh, no, it's Mike.
Yeah,
that's what's going on. We have Mike on the line.
But we can't go to him.
Is he nice? Okay, so we'll go to a break. Okay. I'm in a fluster because it's snowing outside. Okay, so we'll go to a break. And when we come back, we will talk to Mike.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Indeed, this is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And we are so professional.
And I'm Dean Holland, and happy to be here with Charlie Dobbin, and also happy to have Mike on the line from Dorchester. How are you this morning, Mike?
Morning.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning. Do you hear me?
Yes,
yeah,
we do.
How are you?
I'm fine. Fertilizing.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you advocate fertilizing, and my wife's on my back to fertilize the lawn 3 times a year. Why do we have to fertilize so much? I look at the parkland, the farmers' fields, the the boulevards on the streets. That grass grows fine without fertilizing. Why do we need to fertilize?
Okay, so we don't, depending on the health of your soil. There's kind of two philosophical ways of looking at this. Obviously, the chemical industry loves you to buy fertilizer and use it. That supports them. It also provides nutrients to the grass to be thick and green and grow and give you, you know, a really gorgeous floor in your garden, if you will, or, you know, ground cover. And a thick lawn will, of course, limit weeds. And for some people, dandelions and weeds are just, they don't want them. They want a lawn that's made out of turf grasses, not everything that just wants to blow in and grow. So that's one of the reasons we fertilize, is if it's important to you to maintain a, you know, good, green, thick lawn. I don't necessarily advocate fertilizing 3 times a year, though, again, you're right, the chemical industry would love you to fertilize 3 to 4 times a year. I am a huge fan of the fall fertilizer, though, because the fall fertilizer or winterizing fertilizer on our lawns does prepare the lawn to come through the winter in good condition and be ready to go in the spring. And, of course, that's what's so important, is getting the lawn to wake up in the spring and grow well will limit some of those crabgrass seeds from growing, right, that have blown all over the place. Because remember, crabgrass dies, but the seeds survive the winter. So crabgrass will fill in blank spots in the spring very quickly. Or if your lawn is, you know, ready to go, it's got nutrient available, it's, you know, it's in good condition after the winter, resilient, etc., it will outgrow the weed seeds. So that's, I like to say, I am a fan of the fall/winterizing fertilizing, but otherwise, I agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of you do kind of end up with your lawn on steroids, and it does become a bit of an addiction for the lawn. It starts requiring all these synthetic fertilizers when we make it part of the routine. That's my
Thank
answer.
You very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for calling. Good question, though. And like I say, there's philosophical debates on these things all the time within the organic versus the conventional gardening side, and then everything in between.
Now, Mike mentioned the farmers' fields and so on. Of course, they, you know, they have crops rotating.
They use lots
And they
of
also,
stuff.
Some of them throw, of course, manure and things
they
like that.
They can, they should. It builds their soil.
But that would be something that would also, that we don't typically throw on our front lawns.
True, because it's sticky. But you're right, you can. And I've known people who will use a composted manure or a composted, a highly organic material as a top dressing.
That would be a Christmas gift for the wife. Eh? There you go. I got a skid of cow manure in the driveway.
Yeah.
There you go. Go to it.
Sweetheart. And then the neighbors go, whoa, thanks for that. But it doesn't last long.
No.
But it's more the stickiness. Like manure, when it gets wet, tends to be sticky. So we put it into the gardens because we don't walk in our gardens the way we walk on our lawns. But, building your soil, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
We can go that synthetic route, or we can go the, you know, with the Scott's Turf Builders, et cetera, et cetera. Or build the soil that your lawn is growing in, maintain the life in that soil with top dressing and overseeding, and you'll never ever need to use a synthetic fertilizer in forever by having a good healthy soil and the plants thrive.
Yeah, we did apply a fall fertilizer for the first time ever.
Okay,
and we bought this prior to my joining you on the show
because lawn was a bit sparse.
Well, I think my wife also she likes a nice lawn, and she so it was kind of a, we were looking at it, and I said, why not? Let's give it a try. I've never done this. And the one with the zero in the middle.
Right.
Zero in the middle, higher numbers on either side.
Either end, yeah. So. Yeah, because you don't need phosphorus. The zero represents the phosphorus.
So I thought, you know what? I'm curious. Going to see what it looks like in the spring.
So remember, take pictures, journal. Yeah. The best way to sort of monitor what's going on in our gardens from year to year, spring to spring, December to December, is take pictures.
Okay.
All right.
I have an email here Aldina in Cambridge.
Okay.
She sent you a picture.
Okay.
She said, hi, Charlie, can you tell me what this is? I started it years ago from a cutting. and it's about 6 feet, 6 feet or more.
I know.
And I only cut old or the dead stuff off. The flowers turn to a whitish berry in late summer. She would like to prune it to rejuvenate it. When should she do that? And, yeah, she says your advice is appreciated. And thank you very much, and Merry Christmas.
Ah, thank you very much to you, too. Nice-looking plant. She sent a picture of it blooming.
Mm-hmm.
That is a native shrub. It's a dogwood. It's a form of dogwood, commonly referred to as gray dogwood. Proper name is Cornus racemosa. Native seeds get scattered about by the berry from the berries that the birds eat. So it'll come up places you just don't even expect it. And so she said she started it from a cutting. So maybe she took a cutting in the woods. You'll see them growing in ravines. They need some light. They won't grow in the dark depths of the ravine, okay. but they would be on the outside perimeter of ravines or woodland forested areas. And yeah, you can see spring flowers.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Berries that are quite attractive, even some fall color. I have one actually growing. It's actually in a perfect spot, I guess. When my house was being built, it was just there, sort of on the corner of the lot. And then the bell box and all those silly boxes are there. And it's just, I'm just letting it grow.
Like nice.
I'm just let it camouflage some of that utility stuff. So, yeah, nice plant. When should you prune it? Just like any flowering shrub, you do your pruning. Well, she wants to prune it to bring it down, to make it rejuvenate it. So in the spring, you can prune it really hard in the spring. Take it down to a foot tall if you want. You won't get as many flowers. You certainly won't get as many berries, but you could do that, and then it'll look great in the future. So the pruning hard, it could be just before it flowers or just after it flowers. But either way, you won't see berries that year.
Okay.
All right.
There you go.
We're almost at a racetrack.
We are, yeah. You got big plans for the holidays? Or
taking my daughter home with me today after the show. And then our son will be jumping on a train and joining us next week.
Nice.
And so, just a small gathering for Christmas again.
Yeah. We've reduced. Yeah. We had something planned to get together with family in Newmarket area. And officially, that was kibosh. We all decided just to wait.
Don't
we're
going
to do a Christmas in July, hopefully.
Right, if necessary.
Because it's just not worth it with all of the... We're scaling way, way back.
That's right. Do whatever we can outside. So we're going to look forward to spring and summer, I think, big time again.
Yeah. So we're just going to, it's going to be a Christmas similar to last year. Where we're just laying low and staying with our kids at home. And it looks like, our university kids at least will be home a little longer. It looks like it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We were supposed to be back in class in January at my college, Durham College, but it looks like we're not. It looks like we're virtual again. And for New Year's, New Year's Eve, our gift to each other is we're going to get our booster shots on New Year's Eve day.
Nice. Yeah, I think we're booked for January the 5th.
There you go. Yeah, we're all booking in to get that third booster. Anyway, this has been a ton of fun. We're not here next Saturday because it's not. It'll just be Christmas programming next Saturday. But you have a great Christmas.
You as well. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Thanks
and Merry Christmas.
Thanks again for the stained glass.
Very
I love it.
And I will see you then in the new year.
Absolutely. Whether we'll see you on the New Year's Day or the week after, we're not quite sure.
One or the other.
Stay tuned for that. That'll come up one way or the other. Thanks, Carlos. Thanks to the great callers. Everybody, enjoy your holidays. Be safe. Be happy. See you again. Maybe in 2 weeks, maybe three. Bye for now.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.